Oh, snaps!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, hello, raw feeders. I'm Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company. We are Pets Health is our business, and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. Why? Because kibble is crap. It is. I'm sorry. I don't care whether you're feeding a premium kibble, so-called, I should put, you know, quotes on that, or not, because if it's dry and if it's processed and if it's heated and if it's denatured and if it has synthetic vitamins and minerals and flavorings, well, that's just really not good for your dog. That's not how they were created. They were created to eat meat, bones, organ, fat, green leafy vegetables, some berries, tripe, eyeballs, duck heads, duck feet, chicken necks, bison testicles. These are the things that they were meant to eat. And I just don't get why people are so afraid of feeding what a creature was created to eat. But I got to tell you, it's because there is such a narrative out there. Narratives, narratives, narratives. And you know, narratives don't have facts. Most of these narratives don't have facts. They have these presumptions and they have beliefs. I heard somebody the other day say, well, we just don't believe in the raw dog food diet. Well, what does that mean? I don't believe in it. I mean, if you want to state facts, if you want to talk about what is good for gut health and skin health and digestion and the eyes and, you know, the ability to get rid of parasites naturally. I mean, I'll take a listen to that if you understand that. But if you don't, then I would say, hush it on up. Shh, quiet yourself because you don't sound very intelligent. Okay, you got to have some facts to back up that which you speak. You got to have some facts. We've got a lot of facts in our learning center. Get over there to rawdogfoodandco.com. Go to our FAQ page, then go to our learning center. We've got our experts there. We've got Neely Piazza, Dr. Andy Harper, Dr. Judy Jasek, Dana Chick, Dr. Amanda Moffitt, and also Dr. Todd Cooney. I am excited because Dr. Andy Harper and Neely Piazza and Dr. Judy Jasek, those three are, I'm crossing my fingers because things change, but they've said that they're going to be permanent fixtures on my podcast. Every single week, you're going to hear from all three of these. And all three of these experts in dog health. And I think that that's going to be very powerful for you. If you have friends that are thinking about doing Apoquil or Cytopoint or antibiotics or NSAIDs, which are, you know, pain relievers and all that type of stuff, have them listen to the podcast so that they can get another side. All right. Certainly. We want to introduce them to the raw diet. And I will tell you, there are a lot of raw diets out there for dogs that are, well, they're just not, they're not, as we would call balanced. Okay. A lot of people have their questions about, is it complete and balanced? So a lot of times they mean, do I have to feed my dog anything else other than this one blend? And the answer is yes, you do. But I spoke to a company the other day. I get a lot of companies that call us. And they had kangaroo, emu, camel, ostrich. And here's the thing. There were no organs in those blends. And there was a teeny tiny smidge of bone. And so it was just the protein. And this is the way they were selling it. So I get it if someone is feeding that blend, or it's not even a blend, that meat, and they think they're on a raw diet and their dog has diarrhea, or their dog, you know, is lacking in something. I get it why a vet might say, yeah, the raw diet doesn't work. Because I got to tell you, there's a lot of people that are into this movement that we've been doing for 25 years, some people 40 years, but they're not doing it right. So you got to know how to feed your dog. All right. Hey, listen, today I want to talk about, well, this doctor and my employee, Brian, who is up on so many different things having to do with health and people and pets. And he sent me this article that was just recently posted by Pamela Weibel, MD, WIBLE MD. And she has this site, and it's called idealmedicalcare.org. And this particular article, the title is, "As a Doctor, I Was Trained to Violate My Patient's Right to Informed Consent." Now, this is a human MD, but I gotta think that this is probably going on with the dog health professionals as well. All right. In this article, she says this, and I think in this podcast today, this is going to help you understand what informed consent is, how you get it, and how you determine whether your health professionals, your pet health professionals, are doing what they are supposed to do. Now, when we say supposed to do, that means, are they giving you all the information? All right. All right. So in this article, Dr. Weibel says this: "Early in my training, I learned to get patients to quickly sign consent forms without reading them." So I want to ask you guys, have you ever gone into your pet health professional's office and they're going to put you on a new drug, or there's going to be a procedure, and you've actually known what you were signing? Do they, I'm going to read you what informed consent really is, so you will understand whether you got it or not. But she says, you know, I didn't have time to read these informed consents either. I got my patients to sign them. I didn't have time to read them. I didn't even know enough to explain the risk or answer questions. So they got them in and out of there pretty quick. Now, that's kind of scary, right? If your pet health professional is prescribing something, but they don't know how to explain the risks or answer questions, do you think you should be doing that procedure or giving that medication? So here's what she says is the training that she wished she would have received on informed consent. And she says, well, what is informed consent? And maybe you guys don't even know this, because typically when someone calls me and they're going to single out the food, which is always what they single out, and there's so many other things that are going on, they've never been, they don't have the facts. They don't have anything. It's just sort of this. All right, well, let me give you an example. If someone calls and says, my dog has an overgrowth of bacteria, and my vet says it's coming from the food. Well, the question is this: did they do a fecal? Okay. And how long was the poop, you know, sitting in the container before they did the fecal? But even more than that is that, what's the strain? What's the load? What is the benchmark for, you know, so-called overgrowth of bacteria? And they never, ever know that answer. So how can you how can you make a judgment call if you don't have benchmarks or numbers to compare to? Right? But here's what she says. What is informed consent? It is a medical legal conversation between a patient and a trusted health professional who recommends a procedure. Then they review its alternatives. They talk about the risks and the benefits, and then they answer your questions. So if you're going to go in and you're going to get on a medication, let's say Apoquil, right, for the itchies. Do they review alternatives? Do they talk to you about the risks and the benefits? And then do they answer your questions? That is what informed consent is. You must be at least 18 years old and competent and voluntarily under no duress consent or refuse proposed medical interventions. That's weird. That's a weird explanation right there, because it doesn't seem like that should be allowed, right? That we should be under no duress. And we shouldn't be under duress to consent or refuse proposed medical interventions. I think everybody's been under duress. Certainly, you're under duress if your dog is in a compromised position and you're kind of bullied. You're not supposed to be under duress to consent or refuse a proposed medical intervention. Okay. So that means that anybody who's under 17, parents must be consulted for our treatments or interventions on minors. This is in the medical field. But here is a great acronym. When you go into your vet's office, it's called PARQ, P-A-R-Q. What does that mean? It means this. The acronym stands for procedure, alternatives, risk, / benefits, and questions, because that is the minimum requirement for informed consent. What is the procedure? What are the alternatives? Tell me what the risks are and tell me what the benefits are too. And then I'm going to ask you some questions and I want you to answer those questions. That is informed consent. And PARQ done, okay, in quotes, she says, PARQ done means a meeting was held to establish consent for a procedure in which alternatives, risks, including potential risk and benefits, were discussed and patient had all their questions answered. Now I'm going to ask you, how many times has this procedure actually been done every single time that you've gone into your vet's office and put on a medication or put through a procedure? I mean, really think about it. Are you getting informed consent? If you're not, then you can be putting your pets at risk. Now, in the medical field, she says, what alternatives must be discussed? So if there are alternatives to in this PARQ procedure, viable alternative procedures and treatments must be disclosed, including the option of no treatment and potential risk of non-treatment. Okay? That's the alternatives that must be discussed if you're really getting informed consent. So let's talk about what are the risks and benefits that must be reviewed. Well, she says in this article that the risk and benefits of proposed intervention and all alternative interventions must be reviewed, including serious and life-threatening injuries, such as organ damage, disfigurement, irreversible impairment, and death. Those must be talked about. Irreversible impairment, death, organ damage. Yeah, that's what informed consent is. And then it says, how long can patients actually ask questions? Because as you know, they are on a time crunch. You got about 15 minutes and we get to move on to a new patient because time is money, honey. That is what we see today. So she says, well, how long can patients ask questions if you're going to fall under this PARQ, P-A-R-Q, informed consent acronym? Well, she says, well, patients can ask as many questions as needed to make a decision. And patients can be sent home with educational materials and return at a later date to ask follow-up questions as needed and should never be pressured into an elective procedure urgently. Man, I do not see that being followed. I don't see that being followed. So the next question in this article, she says, well, what if a patient, you as a pet parent, are unable to give informed consent? And the answer is, if unable to make an independent decision, then maybe you need to get somebody else in there to help you make a decision. But don't make a decision right then. All right. And she says, when is informed consent not required? Let's just go over that one really quick. When you're in a life-threatening emergency. And then she puts in quote, implied consent is assumed unless they do not, you know, this is in the medical field, unless a do not resuscitate order is present. But a signed consent is not required for simple procedures such as checking blood pressure or, you know, things like that. You know, blood pressure, temperature, that sort of thing. Okay. So she's talking about how can informed consent be improved? She said, well, non-industry experts with no conflict of interest. Who? Where's that today? Non-industry experts with no conflict of interest should create unbiased, informed consent materials. If intervention is experimental with the risk of serious injury or death, then you need to present them with multiple page informed consent forms. And they should be provided to the patient ahead of time so that they can be signed and that the patient can review them at an earlier time. So they're not, you know, pushed, urged, threatened, bullied. All right, so she says, what happens in the medical field? And I gotta wonder if this is also in the pet health field as well. She says, what happens if a patient lacks informed consent and suffers serious injury? And this is a tough one because we see a lot of dogs that suffer a serious injury. But because maybe the narratives can just say, but that shot, that vaccine, that toxin doesn't have anything to do with this situation, right? But she says, you know, in the medical field, physicians may be held liable in a malpractice case. And without proper documentation, there's no proof of patient consent. So I would always ask for, push for informed consent, or you don't really have a leg to stand on. Be proactive with your health professional about this acronym PARQ. And again, it's what is the procedure? What are the alternatives? What is the risk benefit? And then ask your questions. And you need to do that before all medical interventions, before all tests, before all medications. And in this article, she says this. She says, always request cheaper generic drugs with known safety profiles. That's really important, with known safety profiles. And she says, avoid experimental procedures and new drugs unless benefit risk ratio is in your favor. And when in doubt, ask more questions or get a second opinion. Informed consent is your responsibility. Never agree to anything unless you feel comfortable, and you should never be coerced or threatened to accept certain medical intervention. Dr. Judy Jasek and I say that all the time, that she doesn't recommend certain drugs that are new on the market because they haven't been tested out. And as we know, it's super duper easy to say, this is a safe drug. And then, you know, 5-10 years later, oh gosh, we didn't know that this drug caused cancer. We're so sorry. That just doesn't do it anymore, does it? But if we're going to stand by and say, it's okay, it's all right, you know, I know you didn't know, pat him on the head. No, stop that. Push back. Things have got to change. Your dogs do not have a voice. Your cats do not have a voice. And it is ridiculous that someone gets away with doing their job subpar. Why do we allow that? Would you allow somebody to come in your house and you've hired them for a painting job and they just kind of sling paint everywhere and ruin your floors, maybe run some carpet, run some, you know, furniture? Yeah, it's okay. You did the best you could. I know you were in a hurry and we really didn't talk about it. It's all right. No, you wouldn't do that. Well, why would you do that with an animal? We have to be that voice for our animal. We have to understand what informed consent is. Are we really so busy, I guess is the question, that we just can't do our research? It's just too much of a hassle. We've got to watch some TV. We've got to be on our phones. It's just too big of a hassle. And so we just take, you know, what they say. I don't think that that is the way that we want to go with our pets. Probably not the way we want to go with ourselves in the medical field either. So I hope today that that's explained a little bit more about what informed consent is. It is not a belief. It is not a bias. It is not a narrative. Get the facts. Get the facts. Hold them to their word. If they make a statement, ask questions. Well, let me see it. How did you get there? What's the proof? What's the facts? Ask lots of questions. Oh, and one other thing that I noticed that she talked about in this article, because I didn't read the whole article to you because it's pretty long, but she talks about, like, there are a lot of Facebook groups, and I know I've said they drive me crazy, and they do in the raw feeding world. However, you know, when we've talked about Flea and Tick and Heartwork and Simparica, the ones that have all three in there, there are Facebook groups that talk about what's happened to their pets, the damage that has happened to their pets. Now, a lot of these social media groups are clamping down, not letting information get out, especially if it doesn't move in the way that they want it to. So make sure that you look around, you listen to holistic vets, you talk to people who've been on a clean diet for their pets. Just get more information. Don't just believe everything you hear. Even question what we say here. That's fine. We know that the majority of our raw feeders, the majority of our long-term raw feeders, do a lot of research. And so anyway, I hope that that has been helpful today. Tomorrow, Dr. Judy Jasek will be here. I'm so excited to always have her on the podcast. And then next week, Dr. Andy Harper, who is a chiropractor who also went to med school, right? They have to go. And listen, everybody that is on my team, everybody that I'm associated with are nutritionists, real nutritionists that really study, live what they preach, and see the benefits time and time and time again. So I'm excited to help spread their knowledge as well. So anyway, that's coming next week. All right. Get your dog on a species appropriate diet. We have so many different blends. Does not matter where you start. I would recommend that you feed all models, all blends throughout the month, throughout the 3 months. Give your dog a wide variety, because here at Raw Dog Food and Company, your pet's health is our business, and friends, don't let friends feed kibble. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.